The Lisa Wexler Show podcast is brought to you by Winston Prep School for Kids with Learning Disabilities. Visit winstonprep.edu. Also brought to you by Onboard Services. For your staffing and engineering needs, go to onboardusa.com.
Attorney, advocate, author, public speaker, The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600. Flip that switch and turn on your brain. Here is Lisa Wexler.
Am I the only one who thinks life has become so complicated since we needed to get a password to do everything? I mean, seriously? I can't. It's just now something happened where I need to access my email system and I can't. I wrote down my password and my contacts and then I go to it and they say, no, my authentication failed. How much of your day is spent with your authentication failing? I mean, really, how much of our time is cluttered nowadays with all the different passwords? I mean, you practically need a password to buy underwear, and I'm not kidding. 203-333-9422. It's annoying.
Isn't it the worst when you have to change it?
It's the worst.
And then you can't use the five.
Yes, and then they tell you that you've already signed in as that other person, and you're not allowed to re-sign in, even when they say, have you forgotten? Yes, I forgot. But then when you try again, you're disqualified. It's horrible.
I can't remember them all.
Who can remember them all?
So I write them down on a paper. Christian's
right.
Password.
Right. Right. And you have to remember what the password is, too, because there's a million different passwords. And my sister has pages and pages of them. You know, this is the true thing, Christian. But in my professional life, I do a lot of estate planning with clients as a practicing lawyer. And nowadays, if you're going to take somebody's ins and outs of their life, you better take their digital life. Because if somebody passes away and people don't know how to get into their iPhone or their computer or their internet banking system, nobody gets anything by mail anymore. How's somebody, after you're gone, going to be able to pick up the pieces of your life? It's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. Everybody is so digitally. And you know, it's a new thing because if I'm interviewing people in their 70s and 80s, it's really not a big deal for them. Maybe they have one password for something, but their life isn't that hooked up on a computer. But anybody under the age of 50, forget about it. We're all slaves. 203-333-9422. This is going to be the You Be the Judge hour, so stick around. And but I want to tell you a little bit about what happened yesterday on Capitol Hill, because I think that We have to take this moment in history, take a breath, and just pay attention for a few minutes about what's happening outside our own worlds. So there's a man by the name of William Taylor, and he is not, as some would have it, an unelected bureaucrat. Let's give a little bit more respect to somebody who has devoted his entire life to diplomacy. We have an entire core of people whom we traditionally respect in this country, who go to schools of foreign service, who attain master's degrees in diplomacy, who study the history of peace as well as war, and who devote their lives and move around the world in different embassies and different consulates in order to truly advance the cause of peace and the promotion of American values. It's not something that should be sneered at. It's something that needs to be respected for what it is. You know, when I took this show a number of years ago to Israel, and we did 5 Lisa Wexler shows at the Israeli embassy in Israel, including one of them at Ambassador Cunningham's home that day in Tel Aviv, and the rest at the embassy itself, I got to know just a smattering of people who were professional diplomats with the State Department. And you need to understand that these people chose this career and chose this life because they believe in the advancement of the American values of freedom and democracy. They're real words. I know we live in a cynical time, but we are lucky enough to be able to have the luxury of being cynical. We're not in China. We're not in some of the far-right countries. We don't live under despots and dictators. We take for granted we can say what we want. And so to belittle William Taylor and call him, as I'm seeing in some of the name-calling, the spiteful nonsense that's going on, that he is merely an unelected bureaucrat, misses the entire point. Mr. William Taylor gave testimony today, and according to the news analysis by Peter Baker on the front page of the Times, he laid out the stakes of what he saw as an illegitimate scheme to pressure the Kiev government, Kiev being the capital of Ukraine, for political help by suspending American security aid. He described President Trump holding up $391 million in aid for the clear purpose to force Ukraine to help incriminate Mr. Trump's domestic rivals. And he testified, Mr. Taylor did, that the actions undercut American allies who are desperately fighting to stave off Russian aggression. And he talked about what's at stake. And he said that what's at stake here is not President Trump and his election. What's at stake here is that Moscow, Russia, would like to redraw the boundaries of the entire European Asian continent, of which Russia is part, because Russia would like to reinstitute itself as a former Soviet republic. And it would like to take back under its belly, under its umbrella, and under its control, the many independent republics that have flourished since Glasnost in the 1990s, for which President Ronald Reagan has been so vocally admired in taking down the evil empire. Putin wants to bring it back. And according to William Taylor, Donald Trump's tactics and strategies and ploys and threats play right into the hand of Vladimir Putin's attempts to bring back the evil empire. So make no mistake, that's what's at stake here. President Trump makes it about his election and his reelection, and in his own mind, that's what's the most important thing. But according to Mr. Taylor, that's not what the most important thing is. The most important thing is that American interests have been used to advance the cause of democracy since the end of World War II. And attaching $391 million as a quid pro quo undermines, belies, takes away our advantage, our moral and political advantage. And Mr. Taylor has devoted his life as a lifetime diplomat to trying to keep bad guys like Vladimir Putin from being able to reinstitute their own tyranny. That's how he's devoted his life. And that's why his testimony in the big picture was so damning, was so persuasive, was so concerning. Mr. Taylor said in an opening statement, which was provided to reporters after he delivered it behind closed doors, quote, "If Ukraine succeeds in breaking free of Russian influence, it is possible for Europe to be whole, free, democratic, and at peace. In contrast, if Russia dominates Ukraine, Russia will again become an empire, oppressing its people and threatening its neighbors and the rest of the world." And he vividly depicted the differences between the impeachment inquiry against Mr. Trump and the ones that consume Presidents Nixon and Clinton. He says this is far different. This is far more serious. And because of what he said, and because of how seriously it's been taken, I am predicting that you are going to watch some Republicans start to move away from the unyielding allegiance to President Trump, because there is a wider recognition among many of his own supporters in the evangelical community and other places that this kind of an inquiry goes to the heart of what a president is supposed to do as president of the United States. As president of the United States, when you take an oath to swear allegiance to the Constitution, you are taking an oath for service above self, for country above self. And this is what Mr. Taylor is saying did not happen in this instance. He's saying it was very clear, and he pointed to all different incriminating evidence, that the intent of the Trump administration was to delay this money given to Ukraine in quest of an actual investigation that would get dirt on Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. And that was unacceptable. That's why there was a whistleblower. That was unacceptable to lifelong diplomats because they don't care about who's in the White House. That's the point that you need to understand. The lifelong diplomats go in and out. They are civil servants. But they saw their entire raison d'etre, their entire reason for being threatened because a policy of an internal American election spilled out over American borders to affect foreign policy. 203-333-9422. Let's go to Mike from Manhattan. Mike, you've been holding for a while. Thank you for holding. What's on your mind today, Mike?
I really enjoyed your little, I don't want to say speech, but your description of William Teller's article. It's by coincidence. I was just reading it on the subway before I got to the office today.
And what do you think? Did I get it right? What do you think?
I think you got it absolutely right, and I want to add something onto that.
Sure.
I worked at the United Nations for a few years, and the people who work there, who come from all over the world, they are much the same as the State Department, the diplomats you're talking about. They work because they believe in people having freedom and equality and things like that. So I really hate when people are always like knocking the United Nations, like, what do? They just go to parties and stuff like that. Many of those people who work for the United Nations, they go to countries that I wouldn't even step foot in because there's tribes, you know, tribal regions and things like that. And they're working at these places with their own safety in jeopardy, but they still do the job.
They do. So, and I admire the hardworking people at the UN. The UN has a bigger problem. They have corruption at the very top.
Oh, big time.
Big time. And that, unfortunately, that it's terribly true that that has unfortunately taken away from the individual missions of so many hardworking people who work for the UN.
Exactly.
Because their corruption is massive and horrid, actually.
But that's not the reason I'm calling.
Tell me, Mike.
The reason I'm calling is I'm going to, with all due respect to the woman from Stratford, I couldn't disagree with her more.
Okay, let me hear your point of view. Go ahead.
I'll start off with, I don't think Mr. Trump, and I can't call him president, I'm sorry. I don't think Mr. Trump...
But he is the president, Mike. But
yeah,
you don't want to call him president, that's okay, but he is the president. Okay,
I don't think he spoke with for American people when he made fun of that reporter who had disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
When I don't think he spoke for American people when he bragged about grabbing women's body parts. I don't think he spoke for American people when he went against Megyn Kelly and talking about having blood coming out of parts of her body.
Her you know where.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't think he spoke for American people when he knocked John McClane constantly, a great American hero.
Great American hero. Yeah.
Right.
I hear what you're saying. And I appreciate, Mike, that you called. Look, I wanted Vinny and I want all my listeners to feel comfortable expressing their point of view. To me, that's the ultimate America, right?
Can I just tell you one quick story?
Sure.
This happened about, I guess, well, time goes by fast, about 30 years ago. My firm at the time was doing some business, and I wasn't involved with this particular case, but they were going to do some business with Donald Trump. And at the time, when they were asking for his financial records, at that time, he was saying, well, I'm being audited and stuff like that, but as soon as my audit's finished, I'll give you the records. We never received the records. And one of my coworkers did some work on his own, and he came back, and this was like 1989, 1990. He came back, he says, this guy is broke. And we all thought my coworker was crazy. He said, what are you talking about? This is Donald Trump. And he said, I'm telling you, this guy is broke, and if the firm does business with him, we're going to go down just like he will go down. 2 years later, he files for bankruptcy, and all this stuff came out. Again, he used that same bogus. Excuse, well, I'm being audited and I can't release my financial records at this time.
Yeah.
He's a con man.
Well, you know, Michael.
Quote Mayor Bloomberg, to quote Mayor Bloomberg.
I know. Listen, a lot of people in New York had a lot of business dealings. I had somebody that I know in my life, Mike, that told me that he used to work at the Trump Casino in Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that he didn't vote for Donald Trump, this was before the election, I said, are you supporting him? He goes, oh, no. I said, why not? He said, because, let me tell you, when he was redoing the casino, he ordered a handmade, magnificent chandelier to come for his ballroom. And the person had worked so hard and delivered the chandelier. And once the chandelier was in, he had about a third left to pay on it. and he refused to pay.
Oh, he did that a lot. A lot of the union workers down in Atlantic
City. He would stiff people.
Yeah, he would stiff people. He would say, well, sue me. These people don't have the funds.
Sue me. Where is he going to put the chandelier? Like, and then he said to the guy, take back your chandelier. And the guy was like dumbfounded. What do you mean take back my chandelier? It's a custom-made chandelier for your ball. And where am I going to take it? I made it for you.
Hey, Lisa, can you do, and maybe you did a show, and I missed it. Can you do a show on the Matt Lauer case? Because that really fascinates me.
I have not really taken the time to do any kind of a monologue on Matt Lauer in a very long time. You want me to dig into it a little bit and tell you?
Okay. I'd like to get your point of view.
Okay.
Because I have my point of view on it, and I'll just tell you real fast, and I know nothing. I do think he's guilty, but I don't know how the woman's going to prove it.
You're talking about the Ronan Farrow new allegations? Yeah.
I don't know how she's going to do it.
It's a tough case when you... The facts of that case are not, I don't think, easy to make a conclusion about. Let's put it that way. I think it's very much a he said, she said.
Yes.
And I would really want to know more about the facts rather than read about them, because I know some people are standing up for her and saying that she was mistreated and treated poorly, but there does seem to have been some consent. There does seem to have
sort of relationship.
A relationship. There does have been appear to have been some repeat behavior. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And she was over 21. So I think it's a complicated case, Mike.
Yeah, very complicated. Interesting, but we'll see. Anyway, I really enjoy your show. I wish you were on for another hour. And
thank you, Mike.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you. That's Mike from Manhattan, 1122 on the Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600 and WICC600.com, 203-333-9422.
On air, WICC 600. Online, WICC600.com. Let's stimulate your brain with the Lisa Wexler Show.
Hola, hola, bienvenidos, and welcome back. 203-333-9422 is the number at 1130. We're going to do You Be the Judge and your chance to play to win. We've got tickets to give away to a marvelous concert at the Norwalk Symphony Hall. We've got tickets to give away to Judy Collins. We have tickets to give away to, I think it's called Cowboys Night Out. A couple of other fun things at the Ridgefield Playhouse. And all you have to do to play to win is play. All you have to do is call the show and give me your opinion. And everyone's got an opinion. Right? Everyone's got an opinion. 203-333-9422. So that's coming up in about 5 minutes from now. Listen, there are a bunch of hot elections going on right here in Fairfield County. I've got my eye on a few of them. And I just want to make sure that you know there's an election day. You know, this is historically the year before the presidential year tends to be the lowest turnout. That's unfortunate. That doesn't need to be. It really depends upon you. And your concern as a citizen, your activism, and, you know, your willingness to get off your tuchus on the second Tuesday in November and go vote wherever you are. Go vote. So, but let me just tell you some of the more hotly contested contests that are going on around our region, just to have you be paying attention. Obviously, here in Bridgeport, we have the mayoral contest. And we have Marilyn Moore, who continues to levy charges against Gannon. But the reality is there'll be an opportunity to write in Marilyn Moore's name. And there'll be Joe Gannon as the democratically endorsed mayoral candidate. And there's also a Republican candidate. So that will be happening here. But there are lawsuits going on. But so far, I haven't gotten wind that they're really going to delay or, frankly, affect the election in November. If I hear of any difference in that, I'll let you know right away. In Greenwich, very, very big contest that I think in some ways will have a dramatic impact on the future of Greenwich. Because for the very first time in many, many years, there is a good chance that the Democrat will take over the position of first selectman. Jill Oberlander is the first democratically elected head of their local board of finance, which is called the BET in Greenwich. She's a very bright woman, a very articulate woman, well-liked. She, along with Sandy Litvak, are extremely well-financed. They're both extremely wealthy individuals. And even though they were accused and actually paid for some campaign finance violations in connection with someone on the Democratic team who had committed some violations. So as a consent judgment, all of them paid some money to the SEC. The fact is the campaign of Jill Oberlander is going very strong in Greenwich. Now, she's running against a very well-liked man, Fred Camillo, who is currently a state rep in Greenwich. And he's a lifelong Greenwich guy. He grew up in, I think it's Cas Cab, but don't get me wrong, could be another part of Greenwich. I think it's Cas Cab. But anyway, he's born and raised and lives in Greenwich his whole life. He's not married, doesn't have kids, but he is just very accessible and well-liked and really appreciated for who he is. Jill Oberlander is somebody who has made her life in Greenwich. She chose to raise her family there, became very active in local politics. And it is, in many ways, a race for the direction of Greenwich. And it will be very much a changing of the guard if Jill wins with Sandy Litvak. So that's one to watch. In other contests, we heard from Tom Henry earlier this week on the show Eye on Fairfield that Mike Tetro is facing a tough re-election campaign from Brenda Kupchick because of allegations that he did not properly supervise the Department of Public Works, and as a result, there is toxic waste spread all over town. And although Mike Tetro, also a very well-liked public figure, lifelong Fairfield guy, would typically be the favorite to run for his third term, Brenda Kupchick is also well-known to the people of Fairfield. She's been elected there as well. She's a state rep. So she knows how to get votes as well. So that's one to watch. In the Norwalk mayoral contest, a lot is being made of the candidacy of Lisa Brinton. There was a packed house last night, the Norwalk Hour reports. Overflow crowd for the debate, the mayoral debate. I think that it would be an upset if she beat the incumbent Mayor Rilling. This is for two-year terms. But she's doing her best to make it a formidable contest. And in Wilton, where political registrations have been changing for quite a number of years, and it's neck and neck between Democrats and Republicans now, Lynn Vanderslice, the incumbent, is also facing a formidable challenge from Deb McFadden, who is very well known to people in Wilton and has served in a variety of capacities as a selectman, but not first selectman. So you've got Wilton, Greenwich, Norwalk, and Fairfield, all with tough campaign contests at the top. I'm Lisa Wexler, 203-333-9422, and Bridgeport, 203-333-9422. When we return, you be the judge as we discuss what are the rules and regulations vis-a-vis drivers and pedestrians. You and I have both been both of those, and I think it's really important that we understand our rights and responsibilities. So stay tuned for a really important You Be the Judge case coming right up on the Lisa Wexler Show. Put your fingers on the dial. Get ready to play. 203-333-9422. When I was at the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, we had to create these, these little mini radio shows. And Law and Order was my theme naturally, because I didn't know what I was going to do when I was on the air. I just knew I needed to be on the air. I do love Law and Order. 203-333-9422, although I would tell you it's too violent for me. This just shows you my sensibilities. I have to watch The Office before I go to bed. I have to watch The Office or Golden Girls or Seinfeld or Friends or just anything that is mindless because I can't watch any graphic depictions of violence at all. I have never watched Law & Order SVU. Do you know that? Never. Because I just, my empathy gene is already so out there that it would disrupt my entire psyche. I just can't go there. 203-333-9422. The calls are already queuing up, and you better get in line if you want to have a chance to win prizes, because we have some fun ones as we begin You Be the Judge. And I want to back up a little bit. It's not a typical You Be the Judge, because it's prompted by a real tragedy that occurred in Westport just a couple of days ago. We don't know too many details, but we do know that a gentleman named Peter Greenberg, who was only 25 years old, died as a pedestrian in an accident in which he was hit by a car on Bulkley Avenue North, which is right off the Post Road in Westport, a simple residential street. And frankly, that's all we know. And we know that it wasn't a hit and run. We don't know the name of the person who hit him with a car, but he died. And he died in the middle of the day. And that prompts, and our condolences go out to the family of Mr. Greenberg, obviously, again and again. And I don't know him, and I don't know his family, but the condolences are real. And that prompts, I think, a worthy look into, well, just what are our rights and responsibilities as walkers and as drivers in our area. And I think you'll find that they're surprising here in Connecticut. There was a case that just came out in the Supreme Court. And the way we play You Be the Judge is very simple. I'm going to give you the facts of the case. And then I'm going to ask you, if you were the judge, how to decide it. Now, in this case, I'm going to tell you how the jury decided it. And your job as judge is as if you're an appellate judge. And you're going to tell me whether you think the jury verdict should be overturned. Okay? That's what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me whether you agree or not with the jury verdict. All right? So here's the case. You know what? Let's not do it that way. Should we do it that way? Or should we make people, for You Be the Judge, have to be on the jury as if they were deciding the case for the first time? What do you think, Christian? What do you think? Should we make it as if people need to be on the jury, or they should be the Supreme Court judge overturning the jury?
No, I think the jury.
The jury?
This time.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. I'm not going to tell you how the jury decided. You're going to have to tell me, if you're the jury, how you would have decided the case. And then I will tell you the law and how the case came to be in front of the Supreme Court. And this is a case in which you had a student at Mitchell College in New London. And I'm going to call her Sarah. I'm not going to use her real name. I'm going to call her Sarah. And Sarah went to a party and she drank a bottle of rum with friends. And she got really, really drunk. This is undisputed, really, really drunk. And it was after midnight, and there were snowy embankments. It was winter in New London. And she was by herself, and she was dressed in gold boots and a black jacket and dark jeans. And she walked out into the street, wobbly, and she got hit by a car. And the woman who hit her, when the police were called, had alcohol on her breath. And therefore, she was asked to take a field sobriety test. And she passed the test. She admitted to having one martini 90 minutes before. But she passed the field sobriety test, although the police had smelled alcohol on her breath. And poor Sarah was thrown 40 feet into the ground, into the air. She was immediately taken to St. Lawrence Hospital, but her injuries were so severe she had to be helicoptered over to Yale. And she suffered a mass of lacerations, broken bones, and a traumatic head injury. And the case came to the jury. And the jury was asked to decide fault. The jury was asked to decide who should bear the burden of being blamed for this accident? Should it be the girl who was wobbly and drunk? By all, there's no question about it. She had had the equivalent of 9 glasses of alcohol when she walked into the street in the middle of the night and was not properly seen in time for the car to stop. The car had headlights on. The car was driving on a straight, unobstructed view of a place called Montauk Highway or Montauk Road up in New London. And Sarah was hit. Sarah's lawyer, 203-333-9422, Sarah's lawyer says, you know what? The driver is to blame. The driver drives a car. The driver is in charge of what can always be a lethal weapon. The driver has the legal responsibility to brake and cannot and should not under any circumstances ever hit a pedestrian. And therefore, the driver has a legal responsibility, a legal liability for this accident, civil liability. Now, here's what the driver says. The driver says, no. Number one, Sarah wasn't walking in a crosswalk. The crosswalk was 750 feet away. It would be one thing if I sped up through a crosswalk, but there was no crosswalk. Number two, Sarah was dressed in very dark clothing and I couldn't see her. Number three, I was using headlights and the headlights prevented me from seeing her, but didn't prevent her from seeing me. The headlights are there in such a way to make it easy for a pedestrian to see a car. But I, driving a car, could not see the pedestrian. I wasn't speeding. I wasn't legally drunk. It wasn't my fault. What do you think the law of the state of Connecticut has to say about this? And if you're the jury, if you're the judge, who was at fault, the pedestrian or the driver? Let me give you a little bit of insight, 203-333-9422. In this particular case, the jury made a finding. And what you can do in Connecticut is you can make a finding of comparative negligence or contributory negligence. You don't have to find that one person is 100% at fault and the other one is not at fault at all. You can find that one person is 40% at fault and the other is 60, or one is 10 and 90. You don't have, or 50-50. But the law in Connecticut, this I can tell you about the law. The law in Connecticut says that if you're the injured party and you are found to be at least 50% contributorily responsible for the crime, negligent yourself, then you can't collect any money against the other person. So in order to collect against the other person has to be over 50% responsible for the incident. So let me ask you this on the Lisa Wexler Show. You've got a pedestrian, a drunk young college student. She's wobbling into the middle of a road after midnight. She's had 9 drinks. She's by herself. She gets hit by a car, thrown 40 feet, helicoptered to Yale, lots of injuries. And she says it's the driver's fault. I'm a walker. It's the driver's fault. They have to slow down and stop. They can't hit me. They can't throw me 40 feet in the air. And the driver says, what do you want from me? I didn't see you. I'm sorry I didn't see you. But what are you doing wobbling around in the middle of the road? You're drunk. You didn't see me. Your reactiveness is too slow. Your judgment is impaired. Yeah, I had a drink, but I wasn't drunk. You were. Not my fault. Want to win some prizes? We've got tickets to give away to a bunch of interesting concerts at 203-333-9422. You be the judge. Who's at fault? Don't we need to know the law here? Call me at 203-333-9422. We'll go to Ron first. Then we'll take commercials. Then we'll come back for more of your comments. And I will tell you, you be the judge in Connecticut. What is the law with respect to pedestrians? And you'll be surprised. Ron, what do you think about this?
Well, it's a tragedy, no matter how you look at this, from both sides of the equation. I believe there's contributory negligence on both sides. First of all, she was in the middle of the street. If you're going to be walking on the street, I believe the law is you're supposed to walk against oncoming traffic so you can see a car coming. Apparently, she was hit, or it sounds like she was hit from the rear and not go into the air. She was drunk. She was not in control of her faculties. If I was a jurist in this case, I would say that the majority of the fault lies with the pedestrian. And to some extent, with her friends, because they let her walk home inebriated. And instead of Uber and Lyft, the least they could have done was make a phone call. She could have made a phone call to have somebody take her home. But I believe the law in Connecticut says that if a car hits a pedestrian, the driver is liable.
So that's what
circumstances.
Okay, so you believe if a driver hits a pedestrian, that if you're the jurist, the driver is responsible. But if you had to allocate fault between the two parties, how would you allocate it, Ron?
I would probably allocate it 60 or 70% in favor of towards the injured party.
And when you say towards, in other words, you think that the injured party was over 50% negligent for her own injury?
Yes.
And even though if you found that way, Ron, you know that there would be no recovery against the insurance policy.
I know that.
Okay. But you think that she has to be responsible for her behavior?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. Thanks for the call. Just stay there. And we want to give you tickets. We're going to give you tickets to the Norwalk concert. You going to go?
Sure.
All right, wonderful. I'm going to go, too. All right, let's take quick messages. We've got a bunch of people on hold to play You Be the Judge. Stick around. Stay on the phone if you're on the phone. And we've got maybe space for one more caller, 203-333-9422. I promise to get to everyone. Stick around. You Be the Judge, the Lisa Wexler Show. Before noon. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to go right to the callers. It's You Be the Judge. Very simple fact pattern. An alcoholic student, a student who was affected by tremendous influence of alcohol. The blood level was estimated to be the equivalent of 9 alcoholic drinks. Wobbles into the middle of a road after midnight, wearing dark clothing but cold boots. Not in a crosswalk. Gets hit by a car, thrown 40 feet into the air. The driver took a field sobriety test and passed, although admitted to having had a drink 90 minutes beforehand and definitely had the smell of alcohol on her breath. The driver did. And the jury was asked to decide comparative fault in this matter. And I'm asking you to decide who is at fault. Is it the driver or the pedestrian? And the law that I want to let you know is that if you find that the pedestrian is over 50% responsible for her own accident, then she recovers nothing from the insurance company, because under the laws of the state of Connecticut, if you are contributing over 50% negligent to your own incident, there is no recovery against the other party. Let's go to Ray from West Haven. Hi, Ray. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm fine. So what do you think about this, Ray?
Well, I think people need to take more personal responsibility for their actions. And in this case, it seems it's crystal clear to me that she didn't at all and didn't get any help from her friends. And the driver, at night, at dark, she's wearing dark clothing and stuff. I've been driving at night and stuff, and there's been people on the side of the road, and you don't see them until you're right on top of them, because they're wearing some dark clothing. They don't seem to wear any reflective clothing when they're out at night. I think she's 100% responsible.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Listen, we're going to give you some tickets to some shows at the Richfield Playhouse. You get a chance to decide. We've got Judy Collins. We've got a cowboy show. There's a couple of fun things. So stick around, and you'll get an email, and you get tickets to a show. I hope you can come.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ray. Let's go to Ruth from Bridgeport. Hi, Ruth. Welcome to the show today. What do you think?
Hi. How are you? I think that poor Sarah, I'm sorry for what happened to her. The driver as well. I'm sure the driver was in a bad situation. It was winter time. It was dark. It was after midnight. But I believe that the driver in this case, I believe that the case would be like a 70-30%, the driver being at fault and not the person. Because that could have been a child running in the street at night. That could have been a deer. That could have been any object out there. But when it's winter time and it's dark and it's after midnight, you have to drive carefully and slower. And in that area of town, I believe that you would drive more carefully and slower. So I blame the driver and some part of blame to the girl.
Okay, Ruth. And, you know, I hear what you're saying as well, because what you're saying is that a driver has a responsibility to go slow when a driver knows that their visibility isn't that great.
You got it, girl. That's exactly right on.
Yeah. And not only that, but the fact that she was thrown 40 feet into the air meant that the driver was not going slowly. That's right.
Okay, there you go.
That's right. Okay. So this is really interesting. We've got Ruth who says that more responsibility goes on the driver. And we've got Ray and Ron who say, no, I see more responsibility that goes onto the pedestrian. So I'm going to tell you what the jury did. The jury found that the walker was 90% responsible for her own injury, and the driver was only 10%. That was a shocking verdict for the six-person jury, and so it was appealed to our Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court had to decide whether to uphold the jury verdict. And here's what the Supreme Court said. The Supreme Court said that because the plaintiff was not in a designated crosswalk, because the plaintiff was definitely under the influence of alcohol, because the plaintiff was wearing dark clothing, and because of the fact that she was, quote unquote, inebriated, intoxicated, or impaired by the consumption of alcohol, that they found that the jury's verdict was not unreasonable. And because it was not unreasonable, it needed to be upheld. It was a six-day trial. A six-day trial. And this particular case, this jury, felt very strongly, obviously, that this woman should have taken personal responsibility for her actions. The court wrote, at the time of the collision, it was dark outside. The plaintiff was wearing dark clothing, which the jury reasonably could have concluded would have made it difficult for the defendant to see her. On the basis of the defendant's testimony that she never saw the plaintiff and that the plaintiff, quote, popped out in front of the vehicle, the jury could have ruled, could have found that the plaintiff walked or ran into the path and that she failed to yield the right of way to the defendant. Now, what I really want to tell you is the law. Because this law is not the law in all states. And I'm fairly certain it's not the law in New York, for example. So let me tell you what the law is when you're walking around on the street, because I think you'll be surprised. It has long been recognized that it is the duty of a pedestrian, the walker, to exercise reasonable care, not only to avoid known dangers, but to discover those to which his conduct might expose him, and to be watchful of his surroundings. Drivers are not held to as high a degree of care to anticipate the presence of pedestrians in a roadway outside crosswalks. Indeed, while a pedestrian may ordinarily cross a street at any place, it is the law that in doing so, he is bound to exercise care commensurate to the increased danger incident to being in a place where pedestrians do not usually go. And consequently, where drivers need not take the same precaution in anticipation of their presence that they are required to take at regular crossings. How do you like that? The court basically reciting the law in Connecticut that says that if you're walking around and you're not in a crosswalk, the duty is on you to avoid the car and not on the car to avoid you. Personally, if you're going to ask me whether I think that that's law that ought to be changed, I do. Because I believe when you're driving a car, you are in charge of a potentially lethal weapon. When you are walking, you got nothing to protect you. It doesn't mean that you should ever be drunk and wobble in a dark street in the middle of the night. But we're not talking about that kind of unfortunate stupidity. We're talking about how do we determine the legal rights and responsibilities. And in Connecticut, the law is clear. If you're a pedestrian, you better find that crosswalk. You better walk in that crosswalk. And if you're a driver, you better pay attention to that crosswalk. But outside that crosswalk, it's walker beware. I'm Lisa Wexler. That's You Be the Judge today in the Supreme Court case. The name of the case, which was just released last week, is called Rachel Wager versus Alexandria Moore. And I will post it on my Facebook page so you'll have a chance to read the entire case in its entirety. And we can ponder this in the state of Connecticut. It's WICC 600, WICC600.com. And you can download the show if you missed all or any part of it. I think it was a great show today. Thank you for being a part of it. I feel your energy. And you can hear it on SoundCloud tonight without commercials. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or directly on SoundCloud. Christian does a fabulous job of making it really easy peasy. And the show is uploaded, frankly, immediately. So please do listen. Feel free to give me an email anytime you like. You can reach me at LisaWexlerRadio at Gmail, or even easier to remember, Lisa at LisaWexler.com. And I'll be back behind the mic tomorrow. We have tomorrow on the show Keith Gorowski, and we're going to be talking about the census. He's the local head of taking the census. We'll be talking about whether or not you can sign up. It may not be too late to make some extra money and be a census taker yourself. So Keith will be chatting with us about the ins and outs, the whys and the wherefores of the U.S. Census. Thank you for joining us today. We very much appreciate it. Clark Howard up now, and then from 2 to 6 p.m., Paul Pacelli on Connecticut Today. So don't miss more of your community radio station here at WICC 600. I'm Lisa Wexler. Thank you for joining.